There's no reason why that couldn't be your story.
You don't have an expiration date.
Oh, I love that. This is the Authors and Agents Podcast.
Sophie, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm super excited to chat with you, to learn more about you and hear about your book. So start off by telling me about your latest release, Love Naturally.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here. Love Naturally, I have a copy of it here. I don't know if you want to see it or... I had this image of this girl who buys her boyfriend this wonderful gift of going away, and she thinks maybe that'll cinch things for them, you know, show him she can accept the parts of him that aren't her favorite, like camping and stuff. So she buys him this package out to this fishing camp, and he dumps her. And so she decides to go on the camping trip alone. It's not really camping. She stays in a cabin and a lodge, but she goes out into the wilderness on her own. And of course she meets, it's actually the lodge owner's brother who kind of helps with hikes, and there's a little mix up. And so they have to share a cabin. And so, yeah, so it's a fish out of water kind of insta love sort of thing, which I absolutely love writing. So
fun. It sounds like, you know, the best of all the tropes that we love.
Yeah, I do. All wrapped in that close proximity. And, you know, just that idea that she was on that path that she thought was exactly where she's supposed to be. And then she kind of gets this curveball while she's dealing with all the curveballs of like being out in the wilderness and
right
things like that.
Oh, I love it. So this is book number 5. Is that right?
Technically, this is book 4 with St. Martin's. It's the first in a brand new series. So I've been so incredibly fortunate. So I wrote the Jansen Brothers, and I did the 3 books in that series. And then Love Naturally is the launch for my new series. And then I actually just finished up with the first book in a 3rd series for them. So that was my 5th book that I've written for them. So all together in the next 3 years, I'll have 9 books with them, unless I get incredibly lucky and have more.
I mean, that is a wonderful number, right? Like such an accomplishment to have just one come out. But I mean, to have this many, so wonderful. So tell me a little bit about your journey up to this point through publishing. How did that unfold?
It's been a long one, I think. Actually, it was such a strange thing. I've always loved writing since I was younger. My mom used to get True Story magazines. Your listeners are probably too young to know what those are, but there were these magazines you just buy at the magazine stand, and they had like, you know, the trash, I love it, the trashy covers, and it's like, she wants his man or whatever, and you start the story on one page, and then it's like, okay, to finish the story, go to this page. I don't even know why they did that, why they couldn't just put one story at a time, but I guess to flip through the thing. But they were these like really, really short stories, and so when I was 12, I wrote a story to go in there, and of course it didn't get picked, but I have always loved writing, and I have always loved Happily Ever After, but I'm a teacher by profession. I've been teaching for 22 years. So when I kind of, my daughter was 8, she's 20 now, and I had written a story because, I mean, both my children are lovely. One's 20 and one's 17. But, you know, they had their moments. And when my oldest was about 8, she was really picky about money. And she's like, it's my money. And I'm trying to explain to her that, you know, I just felt like she argued with me about everything. So I wrote this story, this picture book, and I was like, oh, whatever. And, you know, I had a lot of fun writing it. And a friend that I worked with at a school was like, oh, I go to this writing conference every year in Surrey, which I'm from Vancouver, BC. And she's like, why don't you come with me? You'll get to meet Diana Gabaldon and all these people. And at the time, I didn't know who that was. And I'm super, super like shy in person. I mean, I come out of it and I end up, I have like 2 modes. I don't speak at all, or I speak so much that I end up apologizing by email and text for like going overboard. So I went, and we went the night before we went, and I got to meet her. So I didn't say hi or anything, but it was kind of cool, right? I was in this room with all these writers and just a small group of people. And it was really cool, because most of us were there as fans, as readers. And then the next day I went to the conference, and when you booked for the conference, you got to get an appointment with a writer and a literary agent. And I was like, okay, I don't know anything, but I brought this book and another one I had started working on and another one I had started working on, because once I start writing, I get really into it.
Of course.
And she was like, I love this book. I want to sign it. It wasn't that book, ironically. It was the second one that I wrote just because I had started. And that didn't work out. As she signed my book, I was thrilled because I'd always wanted to do a picture book. I love picture books. I teach grade six, but I still do picture books now with my group because I love them. I always tell the students, because you know they're at that age where they think they're so right. You're I'm too old for picture mm-hmm. books. And I'm like, you're never right. too old for picture books. It takes me 300 pages in a romance novel to establish the setting, the characters, the conflict. And they do that in like 20 pages. It's amazing.
I know.
And there's this huge amazing. Moral, right? So I had always wanted that, but I knew nothing about publishing. And like I said, as soon as I start writing, I want to write all the things. So then while I was waiting on sub, which I'd never been before, I was like, here, I wrote this and I wrote this and I wrote this. And so my agent politely dropped me. So she did. I was like, oh, wow, I messed that up.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so... So actually she dropped me cause I wrote a romance novel and she's like, right. yeah, this isn't going to go well. And I was like, okay. So that's fine. So then I kind of learned a little bit about publishing. It was really, really hard at the time. I was really super disappointed, obviously. And I started writing yeah. a new book and I started learning about subbing to agents and things like that. My patience didn't get any better at that time, though. So sometimes I would query a book and it wasn't quite finished. Yeah. And so I was learning as I went. And then I don't even know where I found it, but I found a thing for Anaya Press, which is a Christian publishing house. And it was enter to be chosen to co-author a book with one of our editors. And I was like, whatever, that's fine. I'll try that. And I got yeah. it. I mean, it was based on merit, right? Like I got it because I wrote what I wrote, like she had written something and then you had to write something else as your piece okay. of it, right? Like that's how you entered. And so I got see. Chosen and yeah, that was the start. So at the same time, I had written a short story and that got picked up by a very small, it was an agency that became a publishing house. I can tell you a funny story about that later, because that nothing goes as you plan. So that short story got in there. So that was my actual first published thing. But it was at the same time I got this co-authoring opportunity, which was really, truly incredible. It was called our first book was called Dangerous Love. And it was about a woman and she had had this idea in her head. So we started a Google Doc. So I feel like I've come at it really unconventionally, although I don't know if there's any real conventional way to go at it. But because I right. was kind of trying to do it here and trying to get an agent, and then all of a sudden I'm actually writing a book for this company or this publishing house. She had amnesia and the doctor who took care of her actually brought her home because she didn't have anybody and she was actually in a lot of danger and things like that. So it was a really fun book to write. Looking back, I mean, that was 12 years ago, I think. Thank goodness that Kara and I actually wrote well together, because now I'm like, that could have been a disaster, right? Like we just, oh, yeah. our styles mesh. I love James Patterson. And there are times when I'm reading some of his newer books where I'm like, the author just switched. I don't like that, right? Mm-hmm. You want it to be seamless. And I had no yeah. clue what I was doing at the time. So we just got lucky. Our styles merged really well. And we ended up writing two books, Dangerous Love and Jaded Love. And while I was doing that, I was writing more books and I got a small publishing house and then another small publishing house. And then I had one in between agent that was just not a good fit. And then I got my agent that I've had for about 7 years now. And I got in with Entangled Publishing, which was a beautiful launch to my career. I wrote some really books I loved with them. So that was a really good experience. And then I thought I was done. I wrote some cozy mysteries in there too.
Yeah.
No, I thought I was done because I had finished up all my contract work. I worked on contract for several years. Like I had, you know, three books with Kensington and eight books with Entangled and then these side books. And so when I finished all those and the last one was handed in and nobody wanted anything, I was like, that's it. I'm, you know, just over 40 yeah. and I'm done. And I was sad. And then I got the idea for 10 Rules for Faking It. And I sent it to my agent with a few chapters. And she's like, I love this. I'm sending it out. I'm like, well, it's not really anything right now. And it just, that experience speaks so much to this industry, because she sent it out to a few houses. One of the women at St. Martin's thought of Alex Seeholster, who is my editor. She's like, I think you would like this. And she emailed Fred and said, I'm going to pass this on to Alex because I think she would really like this. This seems like her style, which is a wonderful thing that somebody would know her well enough to do that.
Yeah.
And she loved it. She absolutely loved it. And it just was such a, it's not a fluke. I mean, I worked hard. We connected. She loved my writing. Like, it's hard work and stuff, but it's one of those things that if she hadn't said yes, if she hadn't fallen in love with it at that time, it wouldn't be anywhere, right? So it's just, so then I wrote that. And then I just, like I said, when I start writing, then I'm like, Alex, I also have this idea and this idea and this idea. She's like, okay, slow down. So patience has been something I've had to really, really push myself to embrace. I'm not doing a very good job of it. So.
I am with you there. I'm a very impatient person. Right? And so like publishing is the worst industry for people like us because it moves so slowly.
And you don't know that because you go into a bookstore and you see these books. And after I learned a little bit, I went to a workshop once from Grand Central Publishing, and they talked about how they build their calendar and how if something happens and an author needs to move a deadline, what that actually does to their physical calendar. And I was like, how are there any books on the shelves? Because they have to plan so far ahead. It is just this amazing like puzzle piece that I could not do. So I just write the books.
You just write the books, which you're very good
at. Thank you.
I
feel great.
Yes. What I love about your journey is that it is unconventional from the standpoint of like, oh, you must cold query and you must do nothing else but cold query and wait for an agent to reach out. Right. Yeah. I mean, you look for different avenues and we're working on different things. And I think that that's creative and good. And, you know, to a certain extent too, when you had your contract work done and then your agent, you know, shopped around those chapters. I think it shows too how much connections are really important in the industry, right?
They
and
are.
That can be a way that not everybody has access to or maybe know how to get into, but can be really beneficial as well.
Well, and you don't know where those connections are going to take you. And one of those things is, so I do write under Jody Holford as well. Jody Holford is my actual legal name. Sophie Sullivan was an amalgamation of two of my favorite Drew Barrymore characters. When I published St. 10 Rules for Faking It with St. Martin's Press, I had, I think, 23 books out under Jody Holford. So they wanted to launch me as a debut author for rom-coms. Yeah. So that was kind of where that name came from. And over time, you know, it's really exciting at first until you get used to things. But when you put a new book out and you've got stuff out in Publishers Weekly and stuff, you'll often, you know, you, well, we did. I don't know often. I'm just... that we got all these emails about, oh, is the film and TV rights for this? And you're like, oh, you know, you're hyperventilating, like, oh my gosh, what is happening? Yeah. And nothing's happening with it per se right this second. Not that people aren't looking at it, but a weird connection is this man, Brendan Dineen, reached out and he's like, oh, is this available? And so we sent it to him and that's fine. And then him and I kind of started talking back and forth. And now I've written this book for him that comes out next September called All the Other Me under my own name. But the weirdest thing is he worked with Alex, my editor, for like 12 years or something like that, or 12 years. Like he worked at St. Martin's for a considerable amount of time several years ago. And so it's just those weird things that you don't know where things will overlap and lead you. And if you really love something and you have to do it, you find all the avenues to do it that you can.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. It's perseverance, right? We hear it all the time. You never give up.
Yeah.
And it's timing and luck.
Well, and it's true. And it gets, when you are an author querying, and it doesn't matter if you're like, you know, I'm working on a new book and I'm lucky. I get to send it to Alex and my agent, but you know, then they send it out and I still hear no all the time. And it's really hard when you're in that, when you're first at the beginning stages and established authors say, you know, it's, you know, there's going to be lots of no's and you just keep going and it's just perseverance. It's like, could you just tell me the secret? And we're not keeping secrets. It is like every author friend that I have that I admire and look up to and some days envy has, you know, no matter what it looks like, every one of them has had those setbacks and those, okay, well, definitely, we're waiting on this and maybe this will happen and this didn't happen, but maybe this will. So it really, truly, as cliche as it sounds, it is, you just, the only way it doesn't happen somehow is if you stop.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I feel like that should be your advice to querying authors. But do you have any other advice, you know, looking back on your unconventional querying experience besides just, you know, make sure to never give up?
Actually, I was so lucky. Here's another little story is when I first went on Twitter, which I'm not on anymore, but the Jennifer Probst followed me and I felt like I had 11 followers, right? And I was so just overwhelmed because, I mean, she's Jennifer Probst, right? Like a huge romance author. And she was always just, that was the beginning of my journey. That was when I first met Carly, my first agent. And I went on Twitter for the sole purpose of being able to follow her and see if I could decode her tweets of whether or not, you know, she's going to sell my book and things that just don't happen like that. And Jennifer followed me and I, you know, followed her and connected with her over the years. And last year I was asked to be part of an anthology she did, on query, like advice for writers. And that was just such a full circle, cool thing. So I'm going to forget what it's called because I'm that person. Let's see if I can. Actually, don't know where I have it right now, but I will send you the name of it. It's a really cool book, and there's a lot of authors in there, and there's a lot of great advice. For me, I think something that is still really, really, truly hard for me, and I say this fresh off it being very difficult today, is reach out to other authors. It's really scary and it's really hard. Even people I consider my friends, I reached out to a few of them today because I have a new series coming out next October. And when you get a first in the series, you need blurbs and people to back it. And it's really hard to ask people, even when they know that, you know, I'm not taking advantage of you, I happily do this for you, but it's really hard to ask someone for their time in that way. But I've almost never in the last 12 years been disappointed by the results of reaching out and saying, hey, I need some help. Or what do you do when you're in this situation? Or will you take a look at my book for me? Other authors truly get it, and I've had such amazing support, and I do this all the time. I tell people, if you want me to look at something, I'll look at it. I maybe can't look at your whole book, but I will certainly look at your query or your opening pages or your beginning. I will do what I can because that's kind of how we get where we want to be. And almost every, I mean, I don't know of any, so I'm not saying all, but almost every author has had someone who pulled them out in some way.
Yeah.
And you need that support. You cannot do this alone. It's tiring and it's sometimes defeating, and social media is a horrible, terrible place sometimes, certainly for your self-esteem. Yeah. And so having those connections is super important.
Very important. And I would say, for the majority of the authors and, you know, people in this community that I've met, I think you're right on that we all want to build each other up. It's not necessary. I have never felt a sense of like competition or like, oh, I must push you down so that I can have a better chance. Like, everybody is so warm and wants to help everybody because there's enough space for all of us.
And isn't that the most rewarding thing? And even so, it's funny that you said there isn't really competition, because there's not technically, because we don't have any control over it. Once I give my book out, I can buy all the ad space, I can do whatever, but I don't have that control.
Right.
And so sometimes I go on Instagram and I feel like, oh, you know, they're doing so much better than me and stuff. But that is an internal competition. That is me looking at somebody else posting their best thing and me going, oh, I don't compare. But that, you're absolutely right. When you reach out to those people, like, I mean, I know there's not nice people in all things, but I truly believe the writing community is one of the best in the world, and they are focused on lifting others up, and it's not perfect. Nothing is, but I do really think that having those connections and making sure that you have people you can lean on and talk to is super essential, because they're there and I always want to help, right? Like that's the only way I feel like I can show gratitude for what I have and where I am, is to give it back to the next person.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right on there. I jump at the chance to help anybody, right? Or, you know, read or critique, yeah. And when I reached out just blankly and been like, hey, I mean, I'm the worst at writing query letters, always have been. It just stresses me out. Yeah. I can write a 300.
Everybody can. But like, yep.
But a query letter literally melts my brain. And so I always reach out to my friends who are much better at it. And I always get someone who's like, yes, please send it to me right away. You know?
And that's the thing is every author will tell you, I can write a 300 page book, but I cannot write a synopsis. Like, how does that happen? No. Right? So, but no, it's absolutely true. It is really hard, especially when you're close to it.
Yes.
To objectively look at it. And I hate back cover copy. I'm always so impressed by that. I'm like, how did you sum that up? I got one the other day from my editor, and I read through it. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I sent it to my best friend. And she's like, oh my God, that's good. I'm like, I know, I wrote it. I can't believe I wrote something that they made sound like that. I'm like, is that the book I wrote? Cause she did an amazing job on the back cover copy. Right.
I love it.
And I couldn't have done
people
that.
People who excel at the back cover copy and the query letter, like, no problem. You're amazing.
Yes, absolutely. I can't do that.
So speaking specifically about Love Naturally, what is something you hope readers take away from this story?
Probably be hypocritical, but it's okay to go out of your comfort zone, which I don't like to do. I like to be firmly planted in it. But yeah, it is. If you think about comfort zone as a wider lens of pushing yourself to do something that feels not okay inside of you. And that's what Presley does. And that's what Beckett does too, is she goes into this and she's like, this is, you know, if she had booked a trip for herself, she'd be in New York, you know, visiting the Met every day and going to Broadway shows. But she booked this fishing lodge that is run down and honestly being run a little bit by the guests, because when she gets there, they've just taken it over and, you know, they're bleeding money, and there's this cute little family of not even a found family, really. I mean, there is the color family, but there's also these guests that are just this found family. And so, you know, sometimes it's pushing ourselves out of our comfort zone that shows us or leads us where we're supposed to be. So I think taking that away and taking away the idea that I think with all of my books, this one, again, in particular, just it's okay to be who you are. You know, you have to push and you have to stretch yourself. But ultimately, you know, Presley didn't change who she was dramatically, and really neither did Beckett. They accept each other's quirks and they accept each other's differences, but they fell in love with each other. And I think that's really important too, right? You don't have to change. She had to try new things, but she didn't have to change who she was to be loved. And I think sometimes, I guess I'm done raising them. I don't know. They're pretty amazing. Most of the time they raise me, but I have two teen daughters.
Never done raising them, right?
But sometimes they do the raising. But I just think that's, it's such an important thing to share with people and readers, that idea that we think, especially with social media, that we have to alter who we are, what we're doing. And it takes a really long time to learn that when you are just genuine and authentic every single day, doing the best you can, even when you fall down, that it lands you where you're supposed to be. And I think that's what Presley did. So that's something I hope that people can identify with.
I love that. I think we all have had that time of our lives, you know, where, I mean, I can relate to her in that way of like, okay, I'm going to make this work. Yeah. I've got to do what I can to get this person to love me and choose me. Yes. And then you're like, okay, what happened?
Yeah, exactly
right. And then to figure out how to still, you know, how to love yourself for exactly who you are is always a challenge.
It is. And it's an exhausting one, because if she were to stay with the first boyfriend in the book, she could never fully drop her facade of, oh yeah, sure, let's do that, right? Because in the relationship, she was thinking that that was the compromise piece, right? Because you should. Yeah. You don't have to change yourself, but you have to compromise in relationships. And she thought doing all the things he liked was her compromise. And that's that really kind of opened her eyes to that.
Yeah. Wonderful. I'm so excited for it to come out and for everybody
to. Thank you. I'm really excited too. I'm really excited for this one. It's, you know, speaking of pushing your boundaries, I don't like camping at all. I work really hard to sleep under a roof. I don't want to sleep under a tent. I'm terrible. I'm terrible outside. I'm okay. I love being near the water. I love being, you know, near the beach. I just, as long as there's no bugs near me and I can go home and shower. So writing something that, you know, she didn't hate it, but Beckett loves it. So, you know, that was right. That's a little hard. I'm like, what does he love about this?
We just went we took all our four kids to a KOA recently. Okay. and like camped. Yep. In a cabin. Yep. That was pretty. Yep. Nice. I mean, there's showers. Yep. There's bathrooms. Yep. You know, that was like, I'm like, that's how you camp. Yes. With kids, not. Yes. In a tent where they bring in all the dirt. Yes. But like a cabin.
And you've got rocks. Great. We had in bed. Your back. And yeah, we. Yeah, did. I did camp. Nice. Growing up. That's the funny, you know, I loved camping so much when I was growing up. And then my parents bought a cabin and I was like, huh, what's right there? Yeah. And I'm inside. I like this.
Exactly. Perfect. Yeah, so. Well, wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. So next is a two-part question. Okay. I'd love to know what you enjoy most about writing, and then what's the most challenging thing for you about writing?
I love when I fall into the story and, you know, usually, so generally by that point, you know, I've started it and, you know, you hit your stride at a certain point in the story and it's all I can think about, right? Like I'm going to bed thinking about what's the next scene and what's going to happen. And, you know, when I'm in that moment where I truly feel like I am in that world with them and, you know, what's something Beckett could do that's funny to her. And, you know, I'm thinking like Beckett and I'm thinking like Presley. I love that. I love when I feel like I'm visiting with friends or it's, you know, I'll be like, oh, what was that? And I'm like, oh, that was like a little scene I wrote. It wasn't a TV show. Like that was in my head. And that just feels really good. And likewise, on the flip side of that is when the edits come back and they're like, no, right. You know, why does this. Right. Happen? This doesn't make sense. And I mean, I have wonderful editors and I'm very grateful. And you definitely can have conversations about what works and what doesn't. And if I'm really adamant about something, then it's okay. But I do find it really hard to go through the editing process. I get that kind of defeatist feeling as soon as the edit letter comes back. I think I have that, you know, I wrote it, I'm happy, I handed it in, I'm done now. And there's no book that I've written that hasn't been better post-editing, but it feels like. Yeah. Such a big job to dive back in. And usually I've started another book at that point. So to dive back in and pull it apart and put it back together is really, really challenging for me. I'm always happier with the end result, but it's a tricky one for me.
Oh yeah. Because I think, I mean, I love the drafting process too. And I love that part where you're talking about where you just like hit the. Yeah. Flow of the story and you're all coming together. I can't get the. Yeah. Words out fast. Yes. Enough. And there's something so exciting about that as opposed to revising, which yes, of course the end result is always better, but you're like,
yeah,
it's a little hard.
Yep.
to get excitement. Yep. As you're picking pieces apart. Yeah. Or removing things you really liked, but don't make. Yes. Sense to other people. Yes.
And part of you wants, I just, you know, the first few times I got really big edit letters, I'm like, just forget it. I'll just scrap it and start again. And it's like, no, because like that process is actually what creates the depth in the book, right? Like. Yes. Start using that same document. Okay, why doesn't this piece work? I have to, you know, you have to build on it and you have to, you know, it's those layers that actually create something. But yeah, I often. Yeah. Just want to rage quit it and start a new one.
Yes. Yes, I've been there. Yeah. You've got to give yourself a minute to like
I do.
The edit letter.
Yeah.
And calm your emotions. Yeah. Down and then you can get into
it. And you really do have to do that for yourself. And that would be another great piece of advice for writers is I have learned because of the way I respond to things that I get that edit letter, I take a deep breath, I read through the email, and sometimes I'll leave it, and then I wait till I have some time, and I read through those letters and the changes, and then I just don't do anything, just for a little bit, so I can sit with it, so I can think about it. In the past, I've been like, oh, I have to start right away. I have to get these edits done. And it's just, it's not, I need time to process what it is they're asking of me. And I found when I do that, when I give myself that little block of time, that generally though, you know, like when you're in that wonderful drafting phase where the ideas are coming, now it's like, oh, okay, hold on, that would work. And so it kind of, it's really allowed that to make it a bit easier on me.
That's good. That's definitely good advice. Because criticism, whether from people you respect and you know that your story's best interest at heart, still feels like criticism.
Of course it does. Of course it does. And you're so passionate about it when you're doing it, right? Yes. It's really hard to take a step back and be like, yeah, this has flaws. And I know it has flaws. I'm not, you know, I know it has flaws. But to, you know, sometimes when they're the first book I have coming out in a third series, so it's the last book I just finished editing, it was hard. It was really like we tore that thing apart, and it was a timeline thing as well as some developmental things, and to kind of shift it all around and not just trash it, right? To just be like, I'll start a new document. And then I screwed up my document as well, which I've never done in Word. So it just, it was really hard. And so just to keep going and to keep breathing and going one line at a time. And, you know, it can be really, really hard to get through some of those moments.
Yeah, definitely. But giving yourself a little space. Yeah. My husband always gets mad. I'm sort of that person where I'm like, okay, fine, just throw it all away.
Yes!
You know, something
happens. Yes!
And he gets so irritating.
Yeah, I'm never going to write again.
I'm done. Yeah. You know, like, but he is always good at bringing me back down to earth and helping me like, okay, it's going to be okay. And yeah, I need to have that though. And then
you have to have your initial response and that, what do you mean you don't like this? And I love that moment. And then and then it kind of, you know, you simmer down and I quit writing all the time. I'm like, well, this is my life. This is my last book. Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I've quit writing so many times.
Very bad at quitting.
Yes, I'm the worst at quitting. I just can't do it.
Yeah. What are you writing?
Right now I am writing I am typically sit in like the YA mystery, murder mystery thriller space. And then lately, since like the summer, I've been on a romance rom-com sort of kick. I've never read romance or anything like that before. And so now I'm writing adult contemporary romance about a widow, a young widow with two small kids who goes home to the Oregon coast and is trying to find a house, start over. The problem is she falls in love with the house and its owner, but he's moving and she's staying. Oh, so how do they work?
I love it. I love the Oregon coast. I love the concept. I love the second chance of love trope. I really love that one.
Yeah, so it's definitely in that stage where it's like so exciting and the story is flowing, but it's also exciting because it's something there's heavy topics with grief and all that, but, you know, it's lighter in a way that has no murder in it, which is
nice. Nobody's dying.
Well,
but you know what, I think rom-com in general is shifting a little bit that way. So, I mean, I've been in this long enough now that, you know, what we've gone from calling what I write right now, calling it chick lit and, you know, beach reads to, okay, so now it's like specifically rom-com. But when I write my romances as Jodi Holford, there's not a huge amount of difference between the two genres. So I think it kind of all kind of mixes and merges. And then you've got, you know, you've got those little women's fiction elements in there. Yeah, it's supposed to be a funny, uplifting book, but we all have stories and that's what makes the characters relatable, right? So even though she's a widow, you can still, you want to hope that if something terrible happens that you can have moments of levity moving forward, and you know that you can have a happy ever after. So I think that I definitely see a trend where there are some pretty heavy topics in some of the rom-coms we're seeing.
I will credit it all. I told her this the other day, but I'll credit it, you know, my desire, my whole delve into like romance reading to Jessica Joyce, who was an author on my podcast, but she wrote You With a View, which is about a Yeah, I mean, and there's so much, you know, intertwined with grief and her grandmother and all of that. And at the end of the book, I was like deeply missing my grandmother who passed a couple of years ago, and like went and looked through letters. And I'm like, how is a romance, like rom-com sort of book doing this to me, where I'm like having real emotional feelings, and it's supposed to just be a happily ever after.
No, and it's hard because you you pick those. First of all, I didn't. I saw that book cover, obviously, actually, before I even knew who Jessica Joyce was. When I was looking for, they send you a thing from your publisher that says, "What kind of book cover were you thinking of?" And that was one. I was like, "I love this cover. It's so fantastic. Yeah. Gorgeous cover." And then actually, I just a few weeks ago did Lynn Painter just randomly. She's like, "Let's go on and talk." You know, on Instagram, and Jessica Joyce was there, and it was really lovely to talk to her. She seems super nice. So that book is definitely on my list. But the way you're feeling about that, actually, I felt exactly that same way with Alexa Martin's Better Than Fiction. Just
I haven't read that.
It's lovely and deep and funny, and, you know, but it made me think, you know, of those things. You're like, this is hitting me. And in the best way, right? I can't handle Nicholas Sparks, where, you know, the love interest dies at the end, but I can handle a bit of emotion when you're like, oh my gosh, like this is, you know, this is relatable, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the perfect balance of this is relatable. I'm like, this is hitting me emotionally, but there's enough spice or romance or whatever to balance it out, where it is like you feel so good after reading.
I felt that.
So that's what
sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying, I hope that's what I'm going to be able to achieve with my book about this young
I think
widow,
that's what we all, I actually, I just read Right on Cue by Fallon Ballard, and that was very similar, right? And I think it's those, it might be the age. I'm probably quite a bit older than you, so I'm like 47, and it's a hard stage in life because my kids are grown and we're doing well. Our jobs are really established. We're fine, but our parents are getting older and stuff. And so some of these books, whether it's a widow or a loss of a parent and stuff, like that's kind of the inciting incident in these stories. And so it is like it, you do feel a different tug than I would have maybe when I was 25, right? So reading Fallon's book where the father had passed away and she was kind of dealing with that and stuff, it was like, I want to read this because it's hard, but it's also so like uplifting. It's so fun, right? So finding that balance is hard.
Fallon is amazing. Yes. I've interviewed her on the podcast before as well. And
she's very, very nice. Very nice.
So good. Well, I just have a few questions left for you. Thanks for asking a question
about me. No, I love to know what you're in. And if you want me to look at anything, I'm always happy to look at stuff.
Definitely going to take you up on that. my last few questions are more fun, more relaxed. All right. Not that I feel like any of these were not like fun, but if you could be a character in one of your favorite books, not, this doesn't have to be one of your own books that you've written, but who would you be?
Oh man. Okay. Let's see. If it was one of my own books. This isn't a Sophie Sullivan book. It's a Jodie Holford book, but I wrote a book a long time ago called Falling for Home. And she's a photographer, and she's a bit, she's not the disappointment of her family, but she feels like she is. And, you know, everyone else seems so accomplished, but she doesn't give herself enough credit for what she actually does. And I'm not a photographer in any way, but I love taking pictures and I love making photo albums and things like that. And so, you know, she's got this witty sarcasm that gets her out of having deep conversations, which is kind of fun. So I really, so that was Falling for Home. So that's Lucy Aaron's, I think maybe her. I'm most like probably Everly Dean in terms of like the social anxiety and stuff. And I'm trying to think of books that outside of, I think any, you know what? I would like to be any one of the four characters in the Bride Quartet from Nora Roberts.
There you go.
Because any one of them is awesome. I love those books. And I love the way that book goes together. And I think it would be so amazing to have like lifelong friendships and you do a business together. Oh, yeah. That would be amazing. Oh,
that would be amazing. That's my dream. Yeah. Like your best friend. Okay, let's run a business together and have it be successful and amazing.
That would be awesome.
Wonderful. My next question, I'd love to know who has been the biggest supporter of your writing.
My family and my best friend are huge supports. I feel like I should say my husband, but because he is, he's super supportive and he feeds me, and my children are super supportive and have always given me the space and time I need. And actually my oldest daughter is a writer as well. My youngest daughter is a beautiful writer as well, but my oldest daughter has a book coming out from Blackstone in April. And she, wonderful. She is really brilliant at letting me talk stuff out, and that's been supportive. But I'm going to say my best friend, and the reason, I mean, my mom was supportive too, but I'm going to say because she has read every single thing, good and bad, from, you know, this little one-line idea to whole, you know, manuscripts of writing. And there were some that she didn't like, and it's really hard to hear that, especially from her. Like, her opinion means so much to me. But I need to know. I always compare this to like being on American Idol. You know, you see those auditions that are horrible, and you're like, why doesn't someone love them enough to tell them that they can't sing? So I know that if I was really failing at this, that she would be like, don't. Right? Because she said it. So even though that's hard, I love knowing that I can count on that. And she's so invested in things that she doesn't need to be. Like, I will say, you know, the other day I came up with an idea for a title. But before that, she came up with all these other ideas. And then out of the blue, we had texted 100 times that day, and I just randomly sent the title. She's like, took me a minute, but that's perfect. Like, just that, you know, it's never a bother, and it's never... It's just, it's a really, really cool thing to have her kind of just, you know, she's a librarian. She loves to read. And I'm lucky to have so much support all the way around. But I love that at any moment I can be like, hey, I need this. And she'll be like, well, how about this, this, or this, right? So, and it's always been that way.
So she's not a writer, though. She's a reader.
She's a reader, an avid reader. And she doesn't really love romance. And she reads all my stuff. Ooh. So she loves.
Well, that's a good friend.
Right? Yeah. So yeah. So that's that's pretty awesome.
That's wonderful. I something I feel like every writer should have in their circle is a reader to read. They're just a reader. They're not a writer. Yeah. They're not thinking about it that way. I have a friend who I've made in the last couple of years who is just an avid reader, and was telling her about one of my books, and she was like, "That sounds amazing. Let me read it." Yeah. You know, and she was able to read it and like have, you know, this is what I loved. Yeah. This is what, you know, you should work on. And I think that is so valuable as someone who's so pulled away from and isn't thinking about it from a writer sense of view, right?
Yeah.
Everybody should have a reader who helps them in that way.
You should, because that is the most authentic response you can get to your work. They are not worrying about your comments or, well, she does. She totally attacks me over my one time I capitalized library in a book. And I've never.
Oh no!
Right? But no, like for the most part, then they're not. They're just like, do you fall into this as a reader? Does this do exactly what I intended for it to do to someone who isn't like, well, hold on, the market isn't. You know, like it's just real and genuine.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I'm glad you have so much support.
I do.
Your circle.
I'm very lucky.
We all need that. Well, my last question for you is easy. Okay. It sounds a little bit hard, but it's easy. I'd love to know what your favorite book is right now. Not favorite book of all time. Just something you've read recently that you want people to know about.
Well, I did just read Right on Cue, which is coming out next year from Fallon Ballard. I really loved it. I really just enjoyed it. It had a couple of moments that... you're like, oh, that's hard, right? You can feel the emotion of that. But I loved it. It was sarcastic and witty and funny, and it was like Hallmark with swear words. It was adorable. So,
oh my gosh, that is a category we need in the store.
Yeah.
Hallmark
swear words. So I really loved that. It was really fantastic.
Wonderful. Thank you for that recommendation. This question, we all have a lot of books we want to read, but we can always add more because there's so many out there.
Yeah. So many. The list is endless.
It is. Well, Sophie, thank you so much for chatting with me, for letting us get to know you and hearing about your experiences and sharing good advice. And everybody, please go buy Love Naturally.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.